Okay, so because we're not live, I can't really tell if I have your attention, if you're here really, and without this a wave or something, a thumb waves, all kinds of things. Thank you. And so to become steadied and to be able to recognize what's happening and to recognize it, the obvious. That's really one of the hallmarks of the insight practice. Just recognize what's obvious. You don't have to go digging and searching and fixing. However, at some point, we want then so that to recognize, but then to allow ourselves to feel the experience and know the experience, to register the experience more fully. And so there's like a two-step process that's somewhat akin to a well-known meditation step that's called the initial application of attention and the sustained application of attention. So the initial is when you first kind of put your attention on the breathing. And some people are really good at coming back and starting again, like, look, I'm going to be with the breath. The second step is now to keep it there, to have a sense of continuity. And I liken it a little bit to like pushing a scooter with your foot. That the pushing the scooter is that initial kind of making contact and getting some movement going. And then you coast along for however long you could coast before you push the scooter again. And so to recognize, oh, I'm bored. There's boredom. And then sustain the attention there to really sense and take in the experience of boredom. And it might just be, you might not have, if you're going uphill in a scooter, you don't get much momentum. So you have to kind of push again. Okay, boredom. Boredom. And so as we're beginning to kind of register and be present for it, that way it does two important things. The first, it's another manifestation of your inner freedom. If you're free enough to recognize what's happening and then to make room to experience it more fully, it means that you're not fully caught up in the experience. You're not, there's some part of you has a degree of agency. This is what I'm going to choose to do. I'm going to recognize it and really kind of sense it, feel it more fully. And so you are exercising a degree of freedom that we shouldn't underestimate its value. And in some ways, the path to freedom is a path of starting to exercise our capacity for freedom and then to slowly, steadily grow it until it becomes fully grown. So as we feel it, as we recognize it and see it more clearly and have time to take it in more, at some point we start seeing its component parts. And as you see the component parts, then it's useful to take a good look at those parts. And seeing the component parts breaks up the hegemony of the emotion being this thing, this solid big thing that's in control or is coursing through us. Or so anxiety, for example, it's like has so much authority and so much insistence and so much, drives us, or all kinds of things. But we start seeing that it's made up of different parts, and some of that authority begins to break down. And some of the ways in which we are unduly influenced by some emotions begins to quiet down. So when I teach mindfulness meditation, I like to highlight three or four component parts of our general experience. And sometimes you can be aware of individual parts of these components, and sometimes all three or four parts of the component are operating together kind of as a system or as a coordinated process. So the first, I'll list them the way I usually teach them, because I think that practicing mindfulness this way is in this sequence kind of is pretty productive. The first is to be aware of how things are being experienced in the body. The second is how they're being experienced by what we call emotions. And the third is how we're experiencing them in the mind, like with thinking, especially thinking, the cognitive things going on in the mind. And some things are mostly bodily, some things are mostly emotional, some things are mostly cognitive, but they all kind of can work together as well. In fact, if any one of them predominates, probably the other two are in the picture somewhere there. They're part of the whole. And when I have four things, then I include breathing as part of it. Sometimes breathing is just, I just include within the body, but breathing is so significant that it's helpful, I think, sometimes just to keep it as its own category. Because so much goes on with breathing. Breathing is not a neutral act. You know, I mean, it's at the nexus of so many quality aspects of our life that what happens in breathing, it kind of represents what's happening the rest of our life. And as breathing changes with meditation, that has a wonderful influence on the rest of our life. So it's so when we're looking at emotions, which is one of those, say, those four component parts, then there are times we want to notice, well, given that's an emotion, now where do I feel that in the body? And now we're including the physical side of it. And it's generally said that almost all emotions have a physical component part. And sometimes it's very subtle and it's hard to tell, but there's some place in the body that's activated where the energy of it all is, or where the center of gravity is, or that kind of the locus from where the emotion seems to be known, or how it's known. So already today, we've had some of you name, you know, anxiety in the belly. And there can be anger in the belly. There can be anxiety in the chest. There can be love that's in the chest, and the warmth and delight. There can be a sense of fear that's embedded in the eyes. You can see fear in people's eyes sometimes. You can see fear. You can see relaxation, ease, contentment in people's eyes. And we can feel it in our eyes. We can feel the changing qualities and tension in our, and release of tension in the eyes. So to begin noticing when you have an emotion, how does it felt physically? What are the sensations? What are the activations? What's the energy that's associated with it? And one of the values of this is that most people, not always, but many people find that if they feel it physically, there's a physical experience in the present moment, they tend not to be so caught by the experience. It tends to be a little bit more matter of fact with it. In contrast, because it takes them out of the thinking mind. So that's the other component part of emotions, is the role of thinking in emotions. And thinking can have a huge role in emotions. In fact, some emotions are born out of our thinking. And I'm perfectly capable of sitting, minding my own business in meditation quietly. And I start thinking about, I don't know why, I start thinking about cars. And I think about cars, and I remember cars have wheels, and the cars need maintenance. And then I think, you know, maintenance, you know, I think my car probably needs maintenance. Oh, by the way, it does need maintenance. And actually, it's been so long since I maintained it that it probably shouldn't be driving it. But I have to drive it anyway. And then I'm just talking to myself, and then I might have, you know, maybe I'll blow a gasket, maybe I'll run out of oil and the car will overheat, and I'll be stuck in the hot weather in the Central Valley of California, and I won't have water with me, and that's going to be terrible. And I can talk myself into a frenzy with imagining the scenario until I remember, oh, I just had the oil change last week. The whole thing was a product of my fantasy. And so sometimes emotions are born out of this storytelling mind we have. Sometimes the storytelling mind is telling true stories, maybe. Let's just assume that you are a very accurate storyteller of exactly what happened in the past. And so you're telling yourself a story, but that's telling of the story is what's fueling the emotion. Maybe it's reasonable. Someone was offensive to you, and so you're angry at them, and that's reasonable. It might happen. But you tell yourself the accurate story over and over and over, and then you remember all the other people who offended you. And the anger inside just grows and grows and grows until it's a fury. And then you hear, just be present for your emotions where they are. And yes, that's what I'm doing here. I'm going to be present for it. It's supposed to be present for it. Not appreciating that you're just pumping it up by just telling the stories over and over and over again. I probably shouldn't use the pronoun you. I mean the generic person, a person, somewhere out there in the world does this. So sometimes what's helpful is to notice the cognitive storytelling mind, the judging mind, the commentary mind that's operating, because that can often fuel the emotion, sometimes keeps it going. Even good emotions, like I can be sitting here, I'm quite capable, sitting here. I saw this morning that some lottery is going to be, it's over $1 billion now. And so I can just sit here and think, wow, $1 billion, that would be so nice. I mean, I'd like to create a second retreat center because our current retreat center is so full, long waiting list. So yes, I can make, with $1 billion, I could probably make 10 retreat centers at least. And isn't that, that would be so great. So many people would be able to go and retreat, and I can imagine the design of them. And I'm just so happy with designing these retreat centers. And I spend the whole meditation period designing, happily designing retreat centers, so gratified having won all this money to build retreat centers. I'm just fueling good feelings. And it's really good to have these good feelings, because if I don't do it, I have to start feeling how despairing I am that I never have time to take my car to the mechanic. And that's just so painful to feel that I can't. Here I am, a responsible person, and I can't get to the car fixed. And I don't want to think about that. So I'll think about designing retreat centers. That feels so good. So don't underestimate through these silly examples how powerful the cognitive thinking, storytelling mind is in relationship to many of our emotions we have. And so if we feel the emotion in the body physically, that takes us out of the story mind. And then you're just in the present moment. If you recognize that the story mind is going on, if the recognition is clear enough, that is like taking a step out of storytelling. It might not stop, but you're no longer in the story. You're not longer identified with the story. And then you can start seeing, well, the storytelling mind, what does that feel like physically? Because there might be a lot of energy and excitement and even a sense of urgency to get these 100 retreat centers I'm going to build with $1 billion going. And so I can feel the tension, I can feel the drive, I can feel the push in the brain, wherever it might be. And as you start feeling the physicality of emotions, if the emotion includes tension, that makes it possible for the tension to begin to relax. If the emotion is being driven, pushed by compulsion, even if it's good emotion, and you feel the compulsion, things start to relax. If there's no compulsion, if there's no contraction, no tightness, no stress involved physically with the emotions that are going on, then feeling them physically, start feeling the good feelings that come from these emotions that have a very different, can have a very different source than the storytelling mind and the gratification or the danger that comes from thinking about stories. So to kind of summarize what I've said in a simple way, that as we begin to learn to be present for our emotions, it can be helpful to notice the physical component part in terms of sensations in the body and the cognitive side in terms of what's going on thinking-wise, belief-wise, evaluation-wise, judgment-wise, commentary-wise, that keeps it going or is fueling it or keeps us kind of locked into the particular emotion that we might have. I've often said this, that there is this idea in the world of psychotherapy that one of the leading causes for depression is rumination. And there are other causes, like the biological causes, but there's a rumination. If we say the same thing to ourselves over and over again, and what we're saying is debilitating, is depressing, is discouraging, then we're kind of feeding ourselves a diet of discouragement. There's a diet of things that are debilitating. And it's a little bit sad for all of us how repetitive our mind can be, saying the same thing about ourselves over and over and over and over again. The drive to, it comes from a very deep place inside. This drive to try to, I don't know, to be telling ourselves the same thing over and over again, the same signal. And over time, with this mindfulness meditation, it's possible to start dropping down deeper and deeper and finding out what's going on at the root of all this complex, repetitive, negative self-talk that many people live with. We don't have to be stuck in negative self-thought talk. We don't have to give it much authority. We don't have to believe it. We don't have to live by it. There is a freedom, a release from the storytelling mind, that judging mind, evaluating mind. So now let's do a meditation around this. So please assume your meditation posture. And then before doing anything else besides maybe closing your eyes, how are you feeling right now? How are you feeling in your body? How are you feeling emotionally? And what's the experience of your mind, your thinking mind? And as you're breathing, influenced by how you're feeling in any of these ways, does your breathing feel easeful and relaxed, or does it feel tight or forced or restricted? If you just sit here kind of quietly and open to your whole experience, which of these four areas do you most gravitate towards? Which of them seems the loudest and most significant? Breathing, body, emotions, or thinking? If you gravitate to one of the four the most, stay there with that experience. But then see if you can notice if there are the other four, three areas, how the other three areas might be connected. If you're mostly with your breathing, what are the sensations in your body you're breathing? Is there any kind of emotional mood or emotional feeling connected to breathing? Any thoughts and beliefs connected to breathing? If you're gravitating to emotions, how does that feel physically? What's the relationship of the emotion with your breathing? Is there a connection between the emotions and your thinking? Centering yourself on your breathing. Recognizing your breathing in and feeling and allowing yourself to register the whole experience of breathing in. Recognize you're breathing out. And for the duration of the exhale, feel the physicality of breathing out. While you're breathing, breathe with, breathe through whatever way, whatever emotion is present for you, whatever mood, mental state, whatever emotional feeling you have. Breathe with it. Breathe through it. As you do, notice if the emotion has a, what physical sensations come along with the emotion, or what kind of thinking might be connected to it. If you notice the physicality, the sensations, or the thinking, the stories, stay close to your breathing. Keep breathing through, almost as if the breathing is what does the recognizing. Breathing is what makes space, breathing room, to feel things. your feeling, however subtle, or every way they appear, your emotions, what difference does it make to spend time feeling how they are physically, physical manifestation of emotion? What difference does it make to feel, to recognize the role of thinking? Difference does it make then to settle down deep into your breathing, as if the breathing lays at the center, body, emotions, and mind. We come to the end of this meditation. What part of these four do you least gravitate towards? Which do you think that you give the least attention to? Breathing, or body, emotions, or thinking, cognitive world? One is the least, give the least attention to. What wisdom do you have about the value of giving more attention to that area? How might it be beneficial for you? To get ready to end the sitting, you can take some deeper breaths, feeling your body, what was introduced this morning, starting with steadying or relaxing, stabilizing oneself, even if it's just a little bit, you don't have to be ambitious, but just a little bit more than you are. And then with that stability or steadiness, being able to have a useful way of recognizing experience. It's very simple and non-reactive. Not for or against. Not approving or disapproving, just being present for. That allows you to begin seeing more clearly the component parts, the bigger picture of what's happening when you have emotions. You might be able to start seeing the physical side. You might be able to see the mental side, the thinking. You might start noticing how it affects your breathing. And in doing so, many of us will start seeing different aspects of an emotion that we usually don't pay attention to. And we get a better sense of the bigger picture of it. We get a better sense of what is feeding it, fueling it, what's contributing to it. And we have a better ability to be free of it, to be present in it, with it, without being caught by it. Because if you're unconscious about the thinking part of it, your thinking's going on, but you're not really noticing it, then there's no freedom from it. You're kind of enmeshed in it. If you're completely reactive to the physical side of it, then you might be so reactive, again, you're enmeshed in it and there's no freedom from it. So to start being freer, see it more clearly. So this is all foundational. This is like the foundation that's really helpful for mindfulness practice, really helpful for the path to liberation. But it's also a foundation upon which we can build, from which we can now, as we settle in and not being in a hurry, not trying to learn, to race ahead, to analyze, understand, figure out, but just as we settle in and learn to be kind of enter into this territory of the of emotions, then we're prepared to be able to see more of what's going on. And this being able to see even more gives rise to wisdom, gives rise to our ability to be discerning and see distinctions within the world of emotions that are invaluable to see. And but first we have to be able to recognize and know the sensation level, the thinking level, the emotional level. Those have to be known well, because those are the very things that are going to provide the information, the data for wisdom to operate. The ability to see some of the important distinctions operating within emotions. So that'll be for the afternoon. We'll now take take an hour and 15 minutes for, at least in California, for a lunch break. And so we'll start here in California at 1:15. But I would like to suggest something for you during that time. So if you have time and ability to do it, you kind of continue with the exploration of the day. And that is, spend some time reflecting on some of the more challenging emotional parts of your life and how distinguishing breath, body, emotions, and thinking component parts of them can be helpful for you. How it helps it create more clarity and more independence, more freedom from it. And there's many ways you can do this reflection, but I suggest you do spend 10, 15 minutes on this. One way is to go for a walk and think about it as you walk. The other way is to journal about it, write about it. The writing is not like writing an essay, it's just writing your reflections down. Could even be bullet points. So engage in this process of exploration, consideration, based on some of the maybe bigger, more challenging emotions you tend to live with these days or around this time. And then we will continue again. We'll start again at 1:15 California time in an hour and 15 minutes. Thank you.